You know, like when just anybody says, don't take things personally. Just you hear that. Hey, don't take it personally. Part of you kind of understands to a degree what that means. You would not be like, what does that even mean? You would have some internal reference point for not taking things personally. So how do you not take things personally? Again, no need to quote the suttas or something like that. Just what is the internal attitude when you hear, hey, don't take things personally, and then you realize, yeah, okay, I should try and not take things personally. What would you try? What would you do? How would you
be more objective in your analysis of the situation? So that
that can come as a result of not taking things personally. But really, we're talking about the internal attitude you would have towards yourself. So what, describe that attitude. How would you not take yourself personally? Because as I said, sure, you will not be able to do it in that thorough manner that the suttas would describe, because that requires a little bit more. But people can, and they understand to a degree, and can actually exercise the attitude of not taking things personally. Even if their behavior is not purified and developed and everything else, they could still not take it personally and keep the mind above personal involvement.
It's definitely a sense of, okay, don't take it personally. Ah, okay. You immediately, internally, you've tried to relax and calm yourself down, step back and go, okay.
Because like we spoke about it before, the choice that becomes apparent, you know, like whether how much you'll be involved with your thoughts, greed, aversion, delusion. Well, this is also a choice that's apparent again. Obviously, how efficient your choosing will be, that depends on other factors. We can talk about it, but initially, you can choose to not take things personally to a degree, and you can do it to that matching that level, so to speak. So I'm trying to find out what that attitude is. Mm-hmm. How would you describe it? So it's just something that you can actually practice. So how do you take yourself in the attitude of not taking yourself personally? What's your attitude towards yourself?
Not myself.
So taking yourself as not yourself.
Not as mine.
Not as yours. So the entirety of your sense of self, of your experience as a whole, you turn against and say, I won't take this as mine. And that does remain an option. As I said, how deep that option will reach, that depends on other factors, but to some extent, even like, as I said, completely undeveloped person with, you know, basic faculties and intelligence can stop and think about it and say, yeah, okay, I'll go throughout my day not taking things personally. What else? How else? What other characteristics of that would you single out?
To not take the significance of whatever, of things, for granted, basically. Like the implications of whatever happens, in a way. As like, as it presents, in a way. The way I would usually think.
Sure. So, okay, so basically keep the perspective in regard to things that you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Because, again, the perspective is that which makes you not take things personally.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say it's attitude of not taking yourself personally could be exemplified through seeing yourself in a third person sense? If you were to kind of remember this whole, what somebody told you, don't take things personally, then you can take that. You can turn the same attitude towards anything you think,
mm-hmm.
anything you feel, anything you intend here and now, and not take it personally. Because it is always on the level of this most immediate choice / attitude. Whether you're going to be personally involved, or whether you're going to keep that context and perspective of, I shall not be personally involved with this situation. So, what happens if you? What is the most general characteristic if you, when you are personally involved with the situation?
ignoring
the context. Loss of context, absorbed. You are absorbed in the objects of your experience. Yeah. The attitude of being just absorbed into day-to-day things, in your senses, in your thoughts, and not having perspective on yourself in the situation,
uh-huh.
that's already a symptom of having taken things personally.
Mm.
So you could be thinking about how not to take things personally when somebody says this, or somebody does that, but if you are absorbed in that, with same lack of awareness,
uh-huh.
you're taking that personally.
Of course, yes.
And that's the point here. You recognize that all these emotions, all these things you might do, are on that kind of, they're secondary to that basic choice of, before I act by body, by speech, or by mind, the most fundamental choice, the most fundamental direction that I have is, go with it, I take it personally, refrain from it, maintain perspective, which will prevent me from taking personally as much.
Mm-hmm.
And do people see now what else is mirrored through this?
Anatta.
Okay, that's too easy. No. I mean, this like going with it or not going with it.
Oh, this has to do with the sense restraint.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why you would start the sense restraint. And keeping the precepts and virtue, because unknowingly you're already diminishing the degree of taking things personally, even if you don't actually know anything about personality or not taking things personally, never heard anatta and so on. That was the point this was leading to. That's why people can understand the attitude of not taking things personally, and they can do it to a degree, but if their behavior is not developed, if their choices and actions are not purified, It's going to work for a few moments, for as much as you have developed your composure, which means very little. And then it will become abstract. It will become that secondary psychologization of, you know, taking things personally while everything is taken personally here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the actions rooted in greed, lust, sensuality, desire, aversion, ill will, annoyance, distraction, delusion, indolence, ignorance, all of those attitudes are attitudes that they fuel personality and they maintain it.
Yeah.
So even if you are saying to yourself in the meantime and trying to genuinely, like honestly, practice the attitude of not taking things personally, if you're still acting out of those reasons, that is your personality. And that's why the mind will not listen, so to speak. But if you were to purify your behavior, that which you already know to a degree, as I said, like colloquially, don't take it personally. I found that very useful. You should try it. And you would have some internal relationship with that thought, so to speak. They would resemble some attitude that you can do and develop. But, as I said, it's too subtle and it's too easy to just fall off back onto the secondary psychologization and ideas, because the mind is not developed. And the mind is not developed because the behavior is not developed and purified.
Now, can we find argument for this? Like, is there an argument that shows that lack of sense restraint increases the possibility of taking things personally? Or is it just someone needs
to
take that on faith, just start doing that and then discern for themselves?
Yeah. You can find a, as I said, if you start describing the attitude of taking things personally,
mm-hmm.
as we did, first thing is, you kind of have perspective, so whatever comes your way, you don't just go for it,
mm-hmm.
because you realize right there and then that you don't know if it's good or bad, doesn't matter. You're just mm-hmm. talking about if you go for it, good or bad, you will not be able to keep perspective of yourself in this situation. You will lose the sight of yourself. Because you went for the things that were presented.
Exactly. So
sight, sound, smell, taste, touches, feelings, and so on.
Yeah.
And so if your goal is to keep the perspective, you realize anything that would absorb you away from it is contradictory, is cancelling it.
Yeah.
And then expand that same principle and see, so what are the things, the foremost of things that make you absorbed in them and take you away from here and now, basically, where you are self-aware. Well, sensuality is the foremost. Ill will is the foremost. distraction, delusion, indolence.
Yeah.
So you don't need faith to recognize that. You would see. Now, you might need faith to stick to not taking things personally, or some seriously penetrative wisdom developed on account of your own intellect, but one way or the other, it needs to be done. You can choose to not take things personally and develop a view and so on, but are you now upholding what you chose through your behavior? Are you preventing yourself from eroding the principle of not taking things personally that you yourself want to develop and see a degree of benefit in it? Or are you actually, you know, like making the effort and restraining, and then it will become even apparent that you don't even need to maintain that attitude, oh, I won't take this personally, I must not forget not to take things personally, because you're not taking it personally by body, speech and mind. And those are the three ways you take things personally. Try it. And you will have a degree of release. You would have a degree of space, safety created internally simply by not having not taken that thing personally. And if you stick to that and say, what if I clarify this little relief and see how far it can go? What if I really push it all the way and make it my being and see? Because so far, it only results in release.
Of displeasure.
Exactly. Yeah. Which you are very well versed with by being alive. By experiencing feeling, pulls, pressures, and so on.
Like, that's also why this either being absorbed with things or having perspective in regard to things, it's very much, it follows the same structure of the gradual training in terms of what needs to be done when, so to speak, as in you start by taking the precepts and keeping the virtue, but then the next when it describes, you know, sense restraint and guarding the sense doors, which is kind of what would come on top of that, is like could basically nearly be summarized by saying, don't be absorbed in what your eyes see, when seeing a sight with the eyes, when hearing sounds with the ear, don't kind of grasp
at feeling the sensations with your body,
of things, the significance of whatever object or whatever.
And that's what those other general descriptions say.
Exactly.
He doesn't grasp any signs and features.
That's what I was referring to. Yeah. And so that's kind of just taking the exact same principle even further.
Yeah. Well, there was also, I think, I don't know the specific sutta, I think a number of them, but it would have been, it would start with a description of a gradual training, keep virtue, keeping the precepts, guarding of the sense, not being moderately eating. And then he goes to an empty hut or a root of a tree and contemplates, as this hut, as this room is empty of others, so is this experience empty of personality, empty of self. And you realize why. You don't start with those thoughts. I mean, you can, but they will be abstract. But if you have actually tamed the wild animal of your mind, the desires and so on, through guarding of the sense doors, diligent sense restraint, then these thoughts cease to be abstract. They become very applicable. Or, I am no one to anything anywhere, and to anyone anywhere in the world, and nobody anywhere in the world is anything to me. So it's like there is no personality here, or in others, nor in between the two, nor in any direction. But that's not just like a view that somebody would be chanting or singing along or something as their belief. It becomes an actual applicable attitude. If applied after or on top of the properly developed gradual training. But my point here is that you don't need more instruction. You already have a thread of recognition what not taking things personally is. And if that's too abstract, or if that's not resulting in greater releases, it's because your behavior still hasn't been purified sufficiently. You haven't taken responsibility for intentions and actions, and that needs to be tamed and endured. And then this will just slot into place, because it's always there, because you already know it.
But I think the really the thing that most people do not have when they, or do not think when they hear don't take things personally, is what you said, don't take the feeling personally, for example.
Yeah,
that's kind of that.
Don't act out. Not taking things. If you have not taken it personally, you will not be able to act out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact, are you acting out of your feelings? By thought, by speech, by mind, means, well, you are taking it personally. They're moving you.
To that extent.
So you don't have perspective. So yeah, so it's not just like, oh, relax, don't take things personally, but it's, oh, I will not take anything personally that I become aware of. Feeling, form, sensations, perceptions, anything, I shall not take personally. I should remain the third person point of view. I should remain contemplating and keeping and upholding the third person point of view, so to speak. As the Buddha called it in another sutta, all things, the entire experience, whatever comes and goes, past, future, traumas, happiness, doesn't matter. All of that converges on the feeling here and now. Not in the past, not in the future. And that's why the liberation is also like here and now in that same sense. First, you need to accept the fact that, yeah, so you are subjected to feelings, to pressures, to sensuality, to ill will. Like, see, you don't want. Like, people know anger is bad and so on, but when it's there, it's like, oh. And then afterwards you're remorseful and so on. So you have to recognize that, okay, so you are liable and you don't know how to remain unmoved by those things. So, as we already said, the successful practice of not taking things personally cannot be done unless behavior has been developed beforehand. And by that, I mean unless you have sufficiently not acted out of sensual desire, ill will, irritation, ignorance, boredom, indolence, distraction, everything else that's unwholesome. And all of those are choices that you make at a time. And if you act towards them, it's because you chose to ignore how not to take things personally.
Would it be somewhat correct then to say that this is why I've always found this a kind of a, I used to find it not really useful advice, don't take it personally, because I'd be just thinking, I can't help it. I can't help taking it personally. It's not a choice that I can make, which is true. But you can kind of recognize that there are choices you can make that will immediately result in taking things personally much less, and then further choices that will then become sort of available.
But even within, like, say, the overall picture, yeah, you can't just not take things personally, but part of you understands to a degree a possibility
that would be
if I wouldn't take things personally. Now I go, I don't want to think about it, I'll carry on doing what I'm doing. But if you stop and think about it, my point was that even colloquially, untrained mind would have a thread of recognition for what it is. In the same sense, if somebody says, oh, just relax. Relax your body. Like, you don't need to be educated for that. You don't need to learn any special techniques or methods or yoga, nothing. You would know internally to a degree. You would have the attitude of relaxation, of certain letting go to a degree. Yes. Now the fact that you can't sustain that longer is because everything else that you do and choose and responsibility that you avoid and so on, you're completely, constantly disturbing it. So then you can keep saying, relax, relax, relax. But 5 minutes before that, you were acting out of desire and shouting at somebody out of anger. So that's like, well,
saying one thing, doing the other.
Exactly. Saying one thing, doing the other. Thinking one thing and then saying the other and doing the other. So, but if you actually stop and think about it, you realize there is already a recognition of that, just how to relax, and there is already a recognition of how to not take it personally. Because you could, when the mind is balanced, say you're not affected right there and then with ill will, with anger, with sensuality, with distraction, with sleepiness, you're sort of just balanced. And that experience, if you start thinking about it, can I not take this personally, you would have some sense. You would have a degree of understanding there. And then see, why cannot I extend this attitude throughout my day? Regardless of what feelings come up, what how others act around me, can I remain impersonal point of view? And there was that other sutra that says the foremost of the outsider's views boils down to exactly, like, basically there is no person either here, but seen in that here and now, present manner, not on the level of some sort of explanation. They would then say, oh, well, nothing matters, because, and that is how most people would take, like, Buddhism in a traditional sense. Oh, anatta, see, nothing, so everything is constantly changing, nothing is really ours. But that is very much yours. Because if somebody upsets you, you would feel it. If somebody provokes you, you would feel it. If somebody distracts you, you would act out of it. So you're thoroughly a person. You're just having this pasting kind of on top of a wound that's, you know, putting a sticker that says not person, but it's very much in fact a person. So that's why anatta can be understood only on the basis of fully understanding anicca and dukkha. Anatta is the result of it. But yes, anicca and dukkha, discomfort, changeability, unknownability, impermanence, however you want to translate it, you recognize those are things here and now. Doesn't matter the conditions, doesn't matter other people. The fact that if you are not ignoring the fact that things are subject to change even while they're permanent, permanently enduring here, there is a possibility of their change at any given time. That's already going to prevent you from taking it personally to the extent you would otherwise. So forgetting about anicca is another symptom of having being absorbed and taking things personally. Forgetting that things, because they're subject to change at any given time, thus they are uncomfortable. To that extent, they are unpleasant. Forgetting that discomfort is again going to make you take things personally. Not forgetting the implicit discomfort of change, you already have a better perspective. Yeah. So anatta is the result of the right practice of right understanding of anicca and dukkha.
And keeping that context alive, not forgetting it.
Mm.
The result of it is you are not touching anymore. You're letting go.
Yeah. How would you keep the context alive? What's the suitable fuel for keeping that context burning?
Aside from sense restraint, those things.
Shame of wrongdoing.
Shame of wrongdoing, sense restraint. More immediately, what would be the, what's the immediate fuel for taking things personal or not? What did you say?
Reflection.
Pain.
What is pain? Yeah, feeling.
Mm. Yeah,
so whatever you're currently feeling is, as I said, is the convergence point, is your place. So it's doesn't matter the mess of confusion you might feel or think about on account of this or that. The point of convergence is how it is being felt in its broadest terms. Take that personally, and you have created a space between you and the entire pressure.
So how do you keep the context of anicca
and
dukkha?
Yeah. So you can to basically constantly recollect and not lose sight of what you're currently feeling. What feeling is currently enduring?
I was thinking, because yeah, that's another sutta, you remember. How do you know you're taking things personally? It's because you're pressured. You are contacted. You are pressured, you are affected. So that you can know, oh yeah, and how does that you feel that?
Yeah,
you feel that. Yeah. So the convergence point, feeling.
Yeah.
If you feel.
To a degree that there is a feeling, to that degree there is some conceit or sense of I am. That's why Arahant is the one for whom there is nothing felt, as the suttas describe.
What is it?
Because there are no traces of personality left.
Pressure, one who is attached or. One who is holding. How could pressure one who is
the groundless one? But there is no basis for anything to be pressured. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the says thing. Like, you don't start as an arahant, as I said. So you're going to have some degree of pressure, some degree of feeling, but through keeping perspective in regard to what you're feeling, that would already. Well, make your sense restraint easier, certainly be freeing you from remorse of wrongdoing, and also by remaining aware of what current feeling is enduring here and now, to that extent you are not absorbed in it, and that is the way of not taking it personally. So you might think like, oh, I shall keep this context of not taking things personally alive by constantly reminding and thinking about it and reading suttas and stuff, but that will kind of wither away. You know, inspiration comes and goes. That's just how these things work. But if you find things like pressures, feeling, even your current body posture, state, nature of it, what it's subjected to, all those things are on the level of here and now, and all of those things can stand as that convergence point from which you can remain impersonal towards it, to a degree at least, and then cultivate that further by not making it worse through unwholesome and unskillful actions, or you can ignore it and then get absorbed in those sense objects. And that's exactly why a noble disciple in the suttas, the one who is committed to the gradual training, the Buddha encourages him to constantly remind and contemplate, not mine, not for me, not I am, in regard to everything that comes their way. And as we said already, that will have a practical result, because they are developed in body, speech and mind. They're committed to the taming of the mind.
A question regarding sense restraint, especially for those on the, you know, gradual path, where, you know, often, especially at the beginning, well, I guess I see a tendency toward rigidity and toward taking sense restraint personally. Especially, I see a lot of young men with maybe aggressive mentalities coming to the monastery, and they want to do the Dutangas, and they want to, you know, all of these things, and it's not sustainable for them. They leave.
Yeah.
How can one have an attitude that's sustainable, that doesn't lead there, and that's not based in a rigidity and taking personally of, I am someone who is restrained?
Well, first and foremost is to learn what actual sense restraint is, because the Dutangas are not sense restraint. Precepts are sense restraint. So you don't need to be not laying down and eating out of your bowl and wearing rag robes, but you need to not tolerate thoughts of sensuality, even when you're sitting in a comfortable chair. Even for a layperson who is not capable to take on these Dutangas and find such an environment, you realize, well, it has nothing to do with the practice. None of those ascetic practices have anything to do with the practice. If they do, in a positive manner, it's for those who already understood what a practice is. And then they would see a direct relationship between those Dutangas and improvement in their practice. So all those young men need to learn basically what the Dhamma is. That's it. They come there, they're inspired, they try to just like overpower everything, but it's like, but that's like you know, you get a guitar that's too loose, somebody tells you, you need to tighten the strings, and you smash the guitar. That's the attitude. So initially there will be some rigidity, even when it comes to just sense restraint, for somebody who is very unrestrained. But again, by learning what the precepts are, where the line is, you can then relax within that without becoming too loose. Because initially, see, if you take rigidity to be a problem in and of itself, any form of saying no to yourself is a form of rigidity to that extent. And but I must not be rigid, will then practically result, go back to sensuality. It's like, well, no, I mustn't be rigid, correct, but I must not go back to sensuality either. That's also correct. So until that balance is found, there's going to be some rigidity involved, even with basic sense restraint and 5 precepts, 8 precepts, not even going into the Dutangas.
Is there a role for joyful practice in leading to that kind of restraint? And I guess I'm asking, like, as an alternative to willpower, how can we cultivate a mind that tends toward restraint?
Through sense of restraint.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like, as the suttas would describe often, only after you've been withdrawn and learned and understood the benefit of it, then the mind will naturally incline towards seclusion, non-sensuality. There is no sort of a sweet pill you can take in the beginning before that understanding. But that understanding can only come through actually doing it first. And that's why the similes in the suttas were always about, you know, trapping a wild elephant and then knocking the stakes in the ground, leather straps, and then it's urinating, defecating, screaming, fighting against it, and then you just have to wait until it comes down. And it comes down, then you offer a bit of food, refuses, okay, you wait. Now then, now okay, takes the food, starts to recognize you, starts to listen, that's the mind. Yeah. So if you still kind of have a desire for finding a way of joyful practice, probably a useful thing to would be to understand why. Why would that be important? Why would joyful practice be important at this stage? Like, say somebody gives you a medicine that's really bitter and makes your whole body rigid for a while, but you factually know and you can reason yourself that it is a beneficial medicine. So then, but you know, I won't take it unless I can take it with sugar. But you can't, because sugar cancels the effects of the medicine.
Mm.
What's the problem? What's the problem with this? Why is this so unacceptable to me that I need to make it joyful? Because if I'm actually tame my mind, then everything will be joyful. Effortlessly. I won't need to make it. It will be the result of successful withdrawal. I mean, jhana, the whole practice of it is exactly that. You finally feel thoroughly in like the deepest parts of your being, you feel free from debt, from peril, from threat, from anything that can harm you. And that's the result of withdrawal from the five hindrances. They were the result of withdrawal from unwholesome states by body, speech and mind. So, yeah, joyfulness and joy, it should be cultivated, but kind of in its own time, when it comes as a result of withdrawal, not before. And it sort of mirrors similar, same with jhana, like when the Buddha says you should cultivate jhana, you should cultivate the pleasure that comes as a result of jhana, so people want to start a practice with that. I want the pleasure of jhana to overwhelm me, make me feel great, and then all the hard work of restraining sense desire, ill will, stuff will fall away because I got the jhana. But then if you actually attend to suttas closely, it's always, no, that's the result of undoing all of this.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And also generosity. You know, one of the first things is,
yeah,
kind of being generous. Because,
yeah,
actually, as you said,
being virtuous in the basic sense,
yeah,
being generous,
that's already...
It will make it easy, but well,
yeah,
it will be less,
you
actually
can,
less hard to,
yeah,
then continue,
yeah,
to do this.
And you can be recollecting those things. There's
mm-hmm.
no harm in doing that,
mm-hmm.
even for like to uplifting of your own mood, factually. Like when a disciple recollects his unbroken virtue, his generosity, it's like, oh yeah, the mind will be more joyful on account of that. But as long as joy is then experienced on account of those right reflections, that's fine. Not if it's experienced on account of compromising the initially rigid state of precepts or sense restraint. Then that's not the wholesome joy.
Yeah, let's sort of say that like the main thing in regard to what you said is basically what you were saying in about that you need to say no to yourself to some things, but not to everything. That's like one sentence. You think, oh yeah, yeah, that sounds, makes sense. But in practice, it's really something that it takes quite a bit of work to understand what you need to say no to.
Mm.
And like you need to kind of realize that it is something that needs to be understood, and you just don't just kind of take for granted the things to say no to, apart from the precepts. Like the precepts are, you know, these basic things. But then on top of that, whatever is rooted in greed, in aversion, in delusion, in unwholesome intentions, is kind of a... It's not something that you already start... You start with some understanding of that, but then you still need to develop understanding of what that means. And kind of
yeah, how deep those principles
yeah,
go.
Yeah, how deep it goes, how far it goes, to what extent, you know, on the level of thoughts, of speech, or whatever. Like small things that seem fine, but you, but then, and then also not allow yourself to verge into, like, yeah, like very easy then to kind of verge into just kind of saying no to anything pleasant, for example, or not eating whatever happens to be agreeable because of, oh no, whatever. That's quite a, yeah, but to basically to find that line is to develop the right view. So it kind of to realize that, okay, it's normal that it shouldn't be clear in the beginning, that I have to work to understand it, because if I fully develop understanding of even this basic principle, that's developing the right view, like essentially becoming a sotapanna. So it's, yeah, just to kind of realize that it's not a trivial thing will already make you do it better.
Yeah, measure the task rightly. What needs to be done, recognize the extent of it. Yeah, that's closer to success. But yeah, that is the suttas also describe that. Sotapanna is the one who understands wholesome is wholesome, good is good, and bad is bad. Which means nobody who is not a sotapanna does not fully understand the depth of what makes good good and bad bad. Everybody can have an idea about it, but fully understanding that principle, seeing it for yourself, what is beneficial, what is unbeneficial, that's the sotapatti, yeah.
That's the middle way, basically.
Yeah,
yeah. It's what the middle way is.
Yeah, so the sensuality on the one side.
Yeah, there is, I brought it up because you all said it, because like it can be like, okay, yeah, so the precepts, the sense train, I do good, I don't do bad, and then I do the practice. It's like, no, that is the practice.
Mm.
Doing that and then fully understanding the principle of that, that is the practice. That is exactly knowing what leads to enlightenment and what doesn't.
Sila samatipanya.
Yeah, exactly. And but people by not seeing that is how they would then go and jump into these dutangas or super inspirational ajans and so on. It's like not recognizing that that's the degree they have to stay on. They just want, okay, so if I keep doing this and tighten, that will result. And one way or the other, whether people commit to meditation techniques that result in being fully absorbed in your bodily sensations or whatever else, or commit to tanga and random observances, they do it for that same reason. Impatient, wanting to avoid things being endured on the right level.
Also pride.
Yeah, that goes hand in hand. Yeah. Conceit, sense of I am, none of that. Because that is actually being dissolved if you stay, say, on the level of the feeling where everything else converges. And by that I also mean you don't act out of it to prolong it, but you don't act out of it to get rid of it. Because it's not yours to begin with. Why jumping in a dutanga or something? What's the problem with this? Are you engaging sensuality? No. Ill will? No. Restlessness? Remorse? No. Okay, well then stop there. But it becomes uncomfortable to stay there. Because if you are staying at that level, you cannot take things personally. And from a personality point of view, that feels unpleasant. That feels threatening. So now you're staying with another layer of threat that's dissolving your personal point of view. And that's kind of the sotapatti. Which is why many people who did not quite want or were not quite ready to understand the Buddha's teaching, but they insisted that he explained to them, when he did, they sort of went into complete panic mode, saying, the suttas described, they would fall on the ground, pull their hair and beat their breast in kind of in despair, saying, oh, that will kill me, that will destroy me, that will cancel me, completely annihilate who I am. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what it will do. But they don't see the liberation and joy of that, they just see a threat, because that is, for many, that will be the first kind of thing that arises. So that's why then people would just not want to stay on that level, which is not that hard to kind of discern, but hard to keep yourself at, because you would then either want to just do these practices or uphold these routines or do these techniques or methods, so I don't have to stay on this level where I am self-aware. And when that kind of uncertainty of the choices, the weight of the actions, convergence points, it's all felt pressuring you. No, just tell me what to do so I don't have to think about it. I mean, how many times we heard that?
Yeah.